Welcome to the INSS English podcast series, where you can listen to researchers discuss their findings and hear about research in progress. 2 weeks before Israelis go to vote for the third time in a year, the political scene in Israel is messed up more than ever, and the deal of the century is not helping. Can Prime Minister Netanyahu pull this off this time, or is Israel heading for another political deadlock? I'm Attila Shonfalvi, visiting research fellow at the INSS, and with me is Yehuda Ben-Meir, former Israeli deputy foreign minister and a senior research fellow at the INSS. Yehuda, where would you start?
Well, first of all, there are three possibilities. As you said, you mentioned whether Mr. Netanyahu can pull it off, which is a good way of putting it, or will there be a deadlock? The other possibility, of course, that Mr. Gantz will win and he'll be able to pull it off. And all three possibilities at the moment are open. The only thing we have to go on, of course, is the polls. And the polls at the moment show it's very difficult or almost, I wouldn't say impossible, but at the moment, the polls certainly show that Mr. Netanyahu cannot form a government. And at the moment, it would see also very difficult for Mr. Gantz to do so. You mentioned the deal of the century. I think that Mr. Netanyahu put a lot of hopes, pinned a lot of hopes on the deal of the century. And he hoped that this, not only the deal of the century, but the way it was presented, a huge show at the White House, a great photo opportunity, as one would say, a show with many people present, and the prime minister together with President Trump and spoke together and that and presented this plan, which is, of course, is a very important plan regarding the future of Israel's borders and the future of the whole, what will be in the areas and the security issues. The prime minister did pin, I think, great hopes that this could give him a boost and maybe try to break the deadlock. Given the polls, and it's the only thing we have at the moment, it didn't happen that way. Many people, by the way, this raised many eyebrows because it was, but never, this was never, nevertheless a very important event. The deal of the century was presented the first time that a plan so definitely pro-Israel was put forward. And the prime minister took credit for it, and he said that he had been working on this for 3 years, and this was a result of his personal relationship with President Trump, et cetera, et cetera. And as I said, he definitely hoped that it would have. It didn't have, at the moment, it seems like it didn't have any effect whatsoever. It didn't boost the Likud. It didn't in any way harm Kahol Lavan. Mr. Gantz is the opposition party. I think there are two reasons for this. One reason is because of this mishap or mistake or whatever you want to call it, when Mr. Netanyahu had to zigzag regarding his initial guarantees the very day that the deal of the century was presented. He told the leaders of the settlement, that the settler leaders that came to Washington and publicly said that on Sunday morning, 3 days following, he's going to the government, will accept a resolution unilaterally annexing the entire Jordan Valley area as well as all the settlements. And this gave a great, of course, enthusiasm amongst the right-wing bloc, which he had hoped to. As it turned out, Jared Kushner made it very clear a day afterwards that this was not in the cards and that the Americans had no intention of going along with this. This was not their intention. And Jared Kushner made it very clear that under no circumstances could there be an annexation before the election. As a result of that, Mr. Netanyahu had a zigzag. And he said, contrary to what he said before, he said he would not now take any action on annexation. And some of the right-wing leaders and the settler leaders said, well, at least annex one settlement, annex one neighborhood, something to show. But evidently the Americans made a clear red line, and Netanyahu made it clear that he couldn't. So in this case, it took a lot out of the good impression of this whole deal, because either Mr. Netanyahu didn't understand the Americans, which is not that good, or he thought he could do different from them and said he couldn't. The second reason, I think, why it didn't have much of an effect was because Mr. Gantz, first of all, arranged through coordination with the Americans a meeting with President Trump. Again, something unprecedented, that the president himself would meet a contending candidate for prime minister who is not prime minister. Formally, he's not even head of the opposition because the Knesset never began to function. So we don't have any government, you don't have any coalition, you don't have any opposition. This was unprecedented. He had a very successful meeting, a long meeting, longer than with President Trump. Mm-hmm. And he himself made it clear that Kahol Lavan, his party, in principle also supports this deal of the century in its entirety, which was difficult for Mr. Netanyahu to say because of the Palestinian state, which is part of it. So it became clear to the Israeli public, I think, that basically the whole issue of the deal of the century is not something which is Netanyahu connected. It's not something which depends on Netanyahu. And Mr. Gantz just spoke two nights ago and again made it clear, when I will be prime minister, we will responsibly and cautiously move forward. So I think this is one of the reasons why so far it has not had any real effect at all.
I'd like to offer another perspective here, because you mentioned that Netanyahu had to make this zigzag regarding the annexation. In spite of that, I look at the deal of the century as a win-win for Mr. Netanyahu, because he got the chance to try and tell his base, listen, if we annex right now, it's a win. Right? It's a win situation. It's a good situation for us. If we don't annex right now, I'm the only one who can annex. So his base, those people in the right who maybe are tired of him, they still sit there and think about the fact that maybe in 1 month, 2 months, 3 months from now, they will have the opportunity to make this historical move with Netanyahu only. They know, and this is what Netanyahu is telling them, listen, the only chance you have to have the Israeli law in the settlement is by having me as prime minister. This is a win-win situation for him, because he can always say, listen, guys, you saw me. I was standing there in the White House near the president of the United States, and I said annexation. And I came home, and they were the ones who pulled the handbrake. They stopped me. You know, Netanyahu likes all the time to blame someone for why he's not doing anything. So this time he can say, well, listen, look at me. I was willing to do everything I can. The Americans stopped me, but you have to stick with me because I can do it after the elections.
I don't think it's a win-win situation. I disagree. Naturally, this is what Mr. Netanyahu is trying to do, to make the best of a bad situation. Because one of the most important criterias, and one I would say of the weaknesses of Mr. Netanyahu, is credibility. Credibility in any political leader is a key asset and something that the public always is looking for. And his credibility here was harmed. And Mr. Netanyahu has a problem with his credibility in general. So, of course, what he's saying to them is, well, okay, I couldn't do it now. I don't want to get into a clash with the Americans. I need their support. But if I'll be elected, I will do it. But again, so this is what he's trying to say. No, clear. I mean, this is what
he's playing this card, you know, all the time.
Yeah, okay. But it's not necessarily a win-win situation. It would have been a win situation had he annexed before the elections.
Because this
would have been an action. Now, you know that many people those people who support him will support him anyways.
Yeah, exactly. Those people not only have to support him, they know that the other guy is not that serious about annexation.
But the leadership, there is a certain element within the right who are suspicious of Mr. Netanyahu, as you know, not from today. Mm-hmm. And therefore, so basically the more extreme right, who should be normally his more strongest supporters, are very unhappy with the situation. So, of course, it's easy to say, now I can't, after the election I'll do it. So what will happen if after the elections the Americans say, well, hold off some more, we want to try to get the Arab states on the bandwagon, we want to try to maybe convince more European countries, etc. The suspicion remains. And again, of course, he will say Gantz wouldn't do it, Gantz won't be able to do it, maybe he'll need support of the Arab party, etc. But Gantz, of course, is saying the opposite. Gantz to say, not only will I do it, but I was the only one who was able to do it in a more responsible faction of that. So it's not necessarily a win-win for him and a lose-lose for thing. I think that basically this is part of the election campaign. I mean, that's what he's saying. That's what Mr. Gantz is saying. And only in the March 3rd in the morning we'll know who convinced who more.
You know, we are dealing a lot with national security here at the INSS. And we are here in a situation in which we had three elections in 1 year. more or less. But still, if you look at the national security situation of Israel, it's still good. Netanyahu was hinting the other day that we may see some kind of operation in Gaza, perhaps even before the election.
No, he made it the defense clear minister that he won't be
said before that. The defense minister also said it just today or yesterday. So, do you see a point before the elections when the IDF can move and do anything in Gaza?
Well, first of all, I understood today from the press this morning that Mr. Netanyahu, in effect, met yesterday with mayors of communities next to Gaza, what we call in Hebrew Otef Gaza, next to Gaza, the ones who are suffering all the time from the rockets or the mortars or the balloons, etc., with booby traps, etc., and that. And he made it clear that before the election, there won't be a military action in Gaza. I think, again, he said this in order to preserve his credibility, which he realized the problem. So he said, and again, unless, of course, the Hamas should do something unbelievable and we should have a major crisis, very difficult to believe that we're now exactly 2 weeks before an election, 14 days before an election, that unless there's some major change in what happens on the ground, the government will decide again to have a problem. Of course, many people will be suspicious that this is related to the election, and this can have a demoralizing effect. So again, I say, unless there'll be something that there'll be a natural consensus that the IDF has to act, I don't see any military action. I think. But the point I want to say is, the idea of three elections, which we have already, as you said, we'll have the third in March 2nd, but this is already decided. If we reach a situation where after this election it will be impossible to establish a government, and the only alternative, of course, will be for another election 5-6 months ahead, this, from a strategic point of view, is something highly detrimental to Israel. Because one of the main strengths and assets of Israel is that we are the only democracy in the Middle East, and we are almost, in many senses, the only stable state in the Middle East.
Not anymore.
So that's what I'm saying. This is the main card that we've had. Israel is a democratic and stable state. We have a democratic system of government. We have elections. There are no revolutions, years po, and the government is changed, as Abraham Lincoln said, by the ballot and not by the bullet, and the country functions. We're a functioning state, not a failed state. A country which has to have four elections, one after the other, within a year and a half or so, begins to have to look like a failed state.
But cardinal decisions are not being made. Cardinal decisions are not being made during this year.
So that's what I'm saying. That's what's bad. It's very bad. A country that can't make honor, there's no budget. The army has a plan, but it doesn't have it budgeted. But beyond that, I'm talking about the implication in the world, the impression it gives you of a country which cannot get its house in order. And therefore, I think that I would only hope that everyone who will be elected realizes that you cannot have basically the whole democratic system will be put into question. And this is something certainly very negative. So we can only hope, whatever happens, that somehow we'll be able to get a government after this election.
The Prime Minister Netanyahu likes to picture himself as Mr. Security. He's the one in charge with the security issues. And so many times his contenders are trying to come up with other issues. For example, health, welfare, education. And Mr. Netanyahu has power to bring back the entire discussion, the public discussion, to the security and diplomatic issues. Are those the most important, as you see Israel today, are those the most important issues that Israel has to deal with? The deal of the century, Iran, Hamas, or other issues?
There are many issues, and the Israeli public, of course, is also concerned, like every democratic country, every country, even certainly every democratic country, is concerned with domestic issues. Nevertheless, I don't think that anyone can question, given our situation, and our security situation, the threats Israel face, always when you go to the election, the security issue, the need for the people of Israel to feel secure and to feel that they have a leadership who can guarantee security is a key issue, will always be a key issue, will always be an overriding issue. The difference this time is, and despite this difference, not only this time, this is what happened in the first election in April, happened much more seriously in September. Unlike the previous times in 2013 and 2015, no one could challenge Mr. Netanyahu's credentials as Mr. Security. and someone who succeeded in diplomacy, etc. And he has been now 10 years in power. And again, it's difficult even now to question it because people know him. He's been in and more or less
in spite
he's taking
of the
care
fact
of security.
That three of his contenders are generals.
So that's what I'm saying. That's why today I think, and this is what we see in the polls. I mean, you see in the polls that Kehol Levan is 2-3 more mandates than Mr. Netanyahu's party has, than the Likud. He had one mandate
but
more
still,
than the
rest
elections.
Very strong in spite of everything he's going through. His indictment and the fact that this is the third time he's going to the ballot.
Yeah, but he didn't win two elections, and the polls doesn't show him winning this election. We'll see. But all I'm trying to say is I think that for the first time, as a result of the combination of Gantz and Yalon and Gabi Ashkenazi, three former chiefs of general staff, they also have security credentials. So I think that the fear or the people in the sense that, you know, the fear of security of Mr. Netanyahu is less than it was before. Less than it was before. Mr. Netanyahu has support. He has support of the right. He has support of people who are used to him. He has some people who are willing to go, you know, all out for him, etc. But again, I think that the reason that he hasn't succeeded as he did before in 2013 and 2015 was because this the play the card of Mr. Security in the sense he has the card, but to play it in the sense that is someone who's standing. And by the way, you see it in the questions: who is fit to be prime minister? When he ran against Mr. Herzog, there was a 20% difference. The people, unfortunately, from Mr. Herzog's point of view, didn't really see him as it. Today, the difference is one has 4%, one 5%, one 7% on and back. But you see, today you have close to 40% who say that Mr. Gantz, could be prime minister. So again, the difference is not critical as it was before, and that's one of the reasons why we face basically a deadlock. And we don't have the Mr. Netanyahu, as you said. He has a lot of things in favor of him, should be winning. And the deadlock depends on 2-3 mandates either way, which can break it.
Right.
So we won't be able to know till we see the results, and then we'll be smarter and we'll be able to talk again.
So, Yehuda, we have one more point on the agenda. The question of national unity government. We saw that before in September and even in April. The Israelis said to the two big parties, Likud and Blue and White, get together, sit together and form a national unity government. Mr. Netanyahu and Mr. Gantz are not there. Do you see any kind of change in the perspective of any one of them that will bring them together to sit together for a while at least to avoid another election?
I think it's much more difficult now than it was before. The thing, of course, that happened between then and now is before September, by the way, the Attorney General announced that he is presenting indictments against Mr. Netanyahu. But Mr. Netanyahu, nevertheless, still had the option of immunity as a member of Knesset. They wouldn't have to stand trial. Once this option was removed, Mr. Netanyahu announced that he withdraws his request for immunity because he realized that the Knesset was going to vote against him in that. And the case has now been presented to the court. The court has already announced the three judges that will be sitting. It's a three judges of the district court which will be trying him. The possibility that Kehol Levan will be willing to sit in a government under the prime ministership of Mr. Netanyahu, in my opinion, is zero.
So deadlock it is. Deadlock it is.
So this option does not exist. Whether the Likud will be willing or circumstances will be such that Mr. Netanyahu, that's what Mr. Lieberman says, Mr. Netanyahu will hang up his shoes as a soccer player does and will say, I'm not standing anymore for prime minister, then it's certainly wide open. You have a good chance of a national unity government. But as long as Mr. Netanyahu remains head of the Likud, as long as the Likud continues to support him as the candidate, I don't think we have that possibility. And that's why the threat of a deadlock remains so serious.
Yehuda Ben Meir, it seems in Israel, the stronger you are, the weaker you are. And the weaker you are, the stronger you are.
It's not only in Israel, in many places.
Yeah, right, but we are dealing with ourselves. So this concludes our podcast conversation for today. Thank you so much, Yehuda Ben Meir. You are welcome to listen to all our podcasts by going to the INSS website. at www.inss.org.il, where you'll find a featured section for our podcast. You're also invited to sign up to our newsletter and receive alerts for the Institute's various research programs. Thanks for listening and take care.
Thank you.